Morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Time is 9:17. Friday, the 15th of April, 2011. With me today is my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Ellis, Senator Thomas, Senator Egan, Senator McGuire. We'll be shortly joined by Senator Olson and myself, Stedman. Today, we have two second readings and four first readings. So today's labor will include the six bills. HB 126 is board extension, nurses, dentists, and barbers. And then HB 119, Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority procurement projects. Those will be both second hearings, and we'll look to the will of the committee on that, on those two. And then first hearings, these bills will be heard and then set aside for further review. House Bill 13, workers' compensation medical fees. House Bill 97, extend invasive plants law. House Bill 173, sport fishing guide services. House Bill 160, tourism marketing contracts and campaigns. So the first item of labor today is House Bill 126 by the House Rules Committee regarding board extensions. This is the second hearing on this bill. We first heard it the 14th of April. That's this year, not last year. My intent today is to bring the bill back and for further review and then look to the will of committee. And if we can have Rep. Hocker come forward, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For your record keeping, I am Representative Mike Hocker, District 32, Anchorage.
Rep. Hocker, could you tell us what this bill does? Again, just for a refresher and for those people at home that didn't watch yesterday.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 126 is a bill that has created, it's an omnibus board extension bill. Those various boards and commissions in the state of Alaska that we sunset as a matter of course in order to force a review of them to make sure that they're continuing operation in accordance with legislative desire as well as providing a necessary public purpose. This bill now includes the renewal, the reauthorization of the Board of Nursing, the Board of Dental Examiners, the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers, and the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. The extension dates are as suggested by the legislative auditors who have completed a review of those, with the exception of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, which has issues that we are continuing to address in the legislature, so it is being granted only a one-year extension, sir.
We have two fiscal notes, one note from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, showing the cost to extend the boards of barbers, nurses, and dentists at $1,431,900 in receipt-supported services. Funding is currently in the FY12 operating budget. And one Senate Finance Committee note from the Department of Public Safety for $1,505,700 in program receipts and mental health funds to extend the Alcohol Beverage Control Board for 1 year. The funding is currently in the 12 operating budget. We previously had the public hearing portion of this yesterday. Do we have further questions, concerns by committee members? Seeing none, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Chairman, I move the Finance Committee pass out the finance version of Senate CS for House Bill 126 with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
We have a motion to move the bill from committee to the next committee referral with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Do we have objection? We have no objection. We'll move that bill from committee to the next committee referral. Next up, House Bill 19 by the Governor regarding the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority's procurement and projects. This is the second hearing on this bill. We first heard this bill April 14th. The intent today is to bring the bill back for further review to look to the will of the committee. Mr. Ted Leonard, Executive Director of the Authority, he can come forward along with his trustee aide, I guess. If you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and briefly explain to the public what this bill does.
Thank you, Chair. For the record, my name is Ted Leonard, Executive Director of ADA.
For the record, my name is Mark Davis. I'm also with ADA.
This legislation would allow ADA to be able to set up its own procurement rules under the state purchasing statutes. It would also allow ADA to partner with the private sector through a corporate structure by allowing it to invest in LLCs, corporations, and also set up subsidiary corporations. It would also expand the definition of projects to allow us to invest in different and more robust sectors of the economy, and it would also allow ADA to bond for Skagway improvements up to $65 million. And then if I could, Chair, have Mark Davis explain the other segments of the bill that are related to other entities.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mr. Davis. There are also amendments, one by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, which permits them to work with the private sector and also make use of federal funds for low-income housing. And there's also a provision to allow two ports that are now owned by housing authorities to apply for Department of Transportation grants. And now they are barred because they're not owned by municipalities. So those are the only other two amendments that don't relate to ADA.
Okay. Do we have any further questions, concerns to ask this morning? Okay. Seeing none, we've got 2-0 fiscal notes in your packet, one from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development for Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority, one from the Department of Revenue for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. And as mentioned earlier, I think we previously have taken public testimony on this bill. Seeing no other questions from committee members, Senator Hoffman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate Finance Committee pass Senate Bill, Senate C.S. Garcia's for House Bill 119 /E with to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Okay, we have a motion to move the bill from committee to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Do we have objection? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move this bill from committee to the next committee of referral. Next up, House Bill 13 by Representative Olson regarding workers' compensation medical fees. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to have the sponsor introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside for further review. Representative Olson's trustee aide is here. He can introduce himself for the record, who he represents, and walk us through this bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Representative Olson. The bill before you, House Bill 13, is an act relating to the medical treatment and service fees as they relate to workers' compensation. To give you a little bit of history where this whole thing started, in 2005, the legislature amended AS 2330-095J to expand the makeup and the scope of the Medical Services Review Committee. Its new mission was to assist and advise the Department of Labor and the Workers' Compensation Board in matters involving the appropriateness, necessity, and cost of medical and related services. The MSRC met a number of times during 2009 in an effort to address any number of issues relating to workers' compensation. At the conclusion of those meetings, a 62-page report was generated, and you should have pages 11 and 12 of that report in your packet. In that report, the committee made a number of recommendations, one of which was to set this new medical services fee schedule in place. That's exactly what this bill does. The intention is to get the bill, get the fee schedule in place prior to the current expiration, which is June 30th of this year. The fee schedule we have in place has been, I guess, band-aided along as we've tried to get something through the legislature, and the last expiration was December 31st of 2010. It was extended by emergency order, and the hope is to get this in place prior to that expiration. As you have read in the sponsor statement, House Bill 13 proposes that full schedule be established. In Section 1, we lay out the basis for the new schedule, which includes thousands, literally thousands of missing CPT codes, medical services codes, and will include things like medical supplies, injections, and emergency transportation. Section 2 is pretty short, just an effective date clause. Mr. Chairman, that's the basis of the bill. We have Linda Hall, as I think you've seen in the sign-up sheet, here in the room to explain any of the finer details on some of the history of 2005, the action back then, and the importance of this code as it relates to, or this bill, as it relates to workers' compensation fees for the state of Alaska.
Okay. We have one fiscal note from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development for $75,000 in interagency receipts, and that's it. We have initial questions by committee member. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Jackson, can you just tell me what the stances of the business owners on this proposed legislation?
Senator Olson, through the chair, we've had no contact by any business owners. There have been contact from some of the industry, and I believe everybody is generally in agreement that we need this new fee schedule in place. The current fee schedule's expiration is problematic. There is not a large expectation of, or not an expectation of a large increase in premiums, but an increase is expected without the fee schedule in place.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, if I could continue. As you look at some of the medical fees that are going to be affected, have you heard or has the medical providers out there chimed in on this bill, since they are the ones that are going to be directly affected with the fees?
Senator Olson, through the chair, frankly, more of the comments have come towards another bill, another workers' comp bill. There has been some discussion regarding usual, customary, and reasonable, or UCR. This bill doesn't change the current definition, I suppose you could call it, of UCR that is in statute. We're just looking at a new fee schedule that will help control the costs and put the new CPT codes in place. Right now we are literally short thousands of CPT codes, and that does affect the billing costs.
Last comment, Mr. Chairman, and correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding is that when you go ahead and having worked in obviously in the medical arena, and when you're dealing with more and more codes, there's a certain amount of education that has to be done by those people, those that are working in the back rooms dealing with the codes, and so that's the concern that I have. And if we haven't heard from them, I certainly would like to hear one way or the other. But if you know, I haven't heard from them, you haven't heard from them. Well, with that, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Senator Olson, through the chair, if I could address that. It's not that the codes don't exist. They simply don't exist in the fee schedule. So the folks in the back room do know the codes. They just aren't covered in the current fee schedule that we're limping along with.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I think we have nobody signed up for the LIO for the public hearing portion, and nobody signed up offline, but we do have Ms. Linda Hall here, the Director of Insurance, if she can come forward, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Linda Hall, Director of the Division of Insurance. I would make just a few comments in addition to those made by Mr. Conrad Jackson. How about? Yeah, I've had a hard time with names this session. There are some charts in your packet that I'd like you to refer you to. There are three. They look like this. My purpose in referring to these is to point out to the committee the differences in the cost of benefits in Alaska compared to, which shows both regional and countrywide. I'm going to only speak specifically to countrywide. And this chart that starts out titled Medical Benefits Constitute the Majority of Total Benefit Costs in Alaska. 75% of the system costs in Alaska are medical benefits. That average countrywide is 58%.
We're going to have a brief Eddie's. Go ahead, Ms. Hall, if you could start over again on the charts, please.
I'd be happy to. The chart titled Medical Benefits Constitute the Majority of Total Benefit Cost in Alaska. In the middle, we have Alaska showing 75% of our system costs are medical costs. You can look at the regional averages and the countrywide average, which I'll speak to. 58% of the countrywide benefit costs are in the medical area. So we are substantially higher in our benefits cost. The second chart I would draw your attention to is titled Alaska Medical Average Cost Per Case Versus Countrywide, and it should be the second page of the chart. Average cost per case in 2009 was $37,000. Average cost countrywide was $27,000. That's actually a 37% higher average per case cost. And then the last thing I will refer you to is the, there's a two-page study done by Oregon every year, and it shows Alaska, I am pleased to say, we have moved from first place, having the highest workers' compensation premium cost in the country, to number two, which is a good thing. It would be better if we were lower. But I am pleased that our costs, our premium costs have gone down. That does reflect in what employers pay for workers' compensation. The point of the charts are to show you how expensive workers' compensation costs are today. And with this fee schedule expiring, this is a cap on cost. It's not a particularly onerous cap. There is a vendor who puts together, based on bill charges that are in our state, we're using in-state data to do this fee schedule. As Mr. Jackson has indicated, we're missing at least 2,000 procedure codes. Those procedure codes are CMS codes, so we're not creating new codes just for Alaska. But we're really stepping back to 2004 methodology, using a fee schedule that is based at the 90th percentile. Most health insurance policies use 70 or 80th percentile. In the WorkComp fee schedule, we're using a 90th percentile. So the fee schedule, I think, is fairly generous, and we want it to make sure that physicians are willing to treat workers' compensation injured workers, and we would be remiss if we tried to have what you hear about Medicare, where none of the primary care doctors really can afford to see Medicare patients. We don't want that to happen here, so I think the fee schedule is such that will not prohibit any type of medical care. There's only one vendor that we're aware of that creates this schedule, and they've created a number of years, and so it would be an outside vendor using the criteria that are put in this bill. And with that, I would be happy to take any questions.
Any questions for Ms. Olson? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we look at the workers' compensation issue, and having been an employer myself where I was obviously dealing with that, what kind of effect is it going to have on the end user, which is the employee that gets hurt? Is anybody seen more easily or less easily, or is there not going to be any effect? How is it good for him to get services out there in case there is an injury?
Through the chair, represent Senator Olson. Senator Olson. I don't think there will be any difference. We have doctors treating workers' compensation patients today under a similar fee schedule. It's just been patched together through CPI indexes. This will go back to creating it based on actual bill charges. So I would think, if anything, it could potentially be easier, but I don't anticipate it creating a problem. That's certainly not our intent.
Last question, Mr. Chairman. So we're not going to have a situation where people that are covered in a workers' comp have injuries on the job are going to be in the situation that many of our elders are in because of the Medicare situation, where people are refusing to, or physicians have decided not, or medical offices have decided not to take medical.
I am not aware of any medical office that has even remotely suggested that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have any other questions for the director? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Coming forward today. That concludes our public hearing portion of this bill. Do we have any final questions for the bill sponsor? Any final comments by the bill sponsor before we set this bill aside for further review?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, not at this time.
Okay.
And
thank you.
Appreciate you taking the time to hear the bill.
Okay. We'll set this bill aside for further review. Next up, House Bill 97 by Rep. Johnson regarding extending the invasive plants law. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to have the sponsor introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside for further review. We do not have Representative Johnson here. I can tell that right away. But we have his trustee aide. If she could introduce herself for the record, who she represents, and then help us with this bill, please.
Good morning, and thank you for hearing the bill. My name is Jeannie Osnes. I work for Representative Craig Johnson. House Bill 97 eliminates the sunset date for a position that's vital to the Alaska's unique and pristine natural resources. The position coordinates a network of dedicated individuals who either are volunteering or have a paid position, educators, people in conservation districts, state and federal agencies. This position was put in a couple of years ago. There was an $80,000 fiscal note to it, and the position had no travel, had no supplies, had no commodities. The fellow that took the job was able to bring in almost three times his salary in grants, so therefore he got a phone, a desk, he got his own travel. So he's able to do the job that was necessary. State does have growing invasive weed problems. The plants that I think are of concern of late are reed canary grass in the salmon streams. There's an Elodia plant in the Fairbanks area that has taken over a slow-moving portion of Chena River. All of these affect the fish. The reed canary grass can not only cause trouble within the streams for the fish, but also change the ecosystem. Another with the reed canary grass, Mr. Chairman, is that it's in Lake Hood, and Lake Hood has over 200 sorties a day that fly to many pristine areas, lakes and rivers, and that is something that this state needs to have a rapid response to, and that's more or less what this position does. It's dealing with the rapid response to new invasive species, dealing with current ones, and coordinating and educating the public.
Okay, we have one fiscal note from the Department of Natural Resources for $101,100 in general funds to continue funding invasive weeds and agriculture pest coordinator. We're going to do the public hearing portion of the bill, but we have nobody signed up in the LIOs and nobody signed up in the off-net, and we've got some folks here for technical questions if we have any, but and nobody signed up in the room. Also, the sheet came back blank. So do we have any questions for the bill sponsor? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You made a comment about some of the noxious plant life that were around Lake Hood and the possibility that they were being transported by a number of the the float plane pilots, I'm assuming that you're talking about. I guess I want to make sure that in the future, 5 and 10 years from now, there's not going to be an enforcement arm to this coordinator position that's going to start violating these pilots, are there? Is there?
Very doubtful. The way the system has worked in many states and expected to work in this state is we have the soil and water conservation districts that are dealing with public, and we also have the Cooperative Extension Service. And a really good example of that is Delta. They have many private farm owners that have had this Canadian thistle, very invasive and very difficult and noxious weed. And through 20 years of working to kill that one species of weed, it is now eradicated from all of the farmland down there. But it's a very long and arduous process to do it. But working with the public and working with private owners, it happens. Through cooperation and not police action.
Sure.
Any follow-up questions?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No questions? Seeing none. Any final comments before we set the bill aside?
One thing is just this one colored chart that you do have in your packet. It is showing where we are today, down on the lower end of the graph. And as things progress, you have the ability for the weed to follow this graph very rapidly up the S-curve. And I think Alaska is very lucky at this point to be at the bottom of that curve. And this position, along with the Soil and Water Conservation Districts and Cooperative Extension, will help us there.
Okay, thank you for bringing the bill before the committee today. We're going to set this bill aside for further review. Next up, House Bill 173, the House Special Committee on Fisheries regarding sport fishing guides. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to have the sponsor introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside for further review. With us today is Representative Thompson. And if he could introduce himself for the record, who he represents. And I think it's your first time at Senate Finance, is that right?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Well, we're a warm and friendly group.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Steve Thompson, from Fairbanks House District 10 representative. House Bill 173 is a one-year extension of an existing program, the Sport Fishing Guide and Operator's License and Logbook Program. This program provides benefits to both the state and the industry. For the state, it provides valuable economic data on the sport fishing industry and critical harvest data for the resource managers. And for the industry, the program provides recognition and professionalism. The Sport Fish Licensing and Logbook Program has been in operation since 2005 and has received regular extensions, and most recently last year. Department of Fish and Game supports House Bill 173, and Charlie Swanton, the Director of Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Division of Sport Fisheries, is here to answer any specific questions regarding the history, administration, and operation of the program that any questions the committee may have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thompson, if we ask you a question you can't handle, we can always call for a lifeline.
And defer.
We have one fiscal note from the Department of Fish and Game for $400,000 from the Department of Fish and Game to continue the program. And that's the only fiscal note we have. We have nobody signed up in the off-net, nobody signed up at the LIOs, and we've worked on these type of issues quite regularly, it seems like, to committee. Do we have questions on this bill? Senator McGuire.
Thank you, through the chair. I just want to say thank you, Representative Thompson. I have the companion over here on this side, and as the chairman knows, the first version of the bill contained a lot more suggested changes, and we had quite a few people online to testify. So the simplified version is a lot better, and I want to say thank you for carrying it on the House side. It's a good bill, and I support it.
Through the chair, thank you, Senator McGuire.
Do we have any other questions for the bill sponsor? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Thompson, as you look at the statewide issue of fishing, there's obviously a tension between the commercial fishermen and the sports fishing, and then you got subsistence plays in there somehow. Have you heard from any of the commercial fishing people to see if they're in favor of this, or what's the stance on this bill?
Well, as far as through the chair, Senator Olson, this program helps provide a lot of information to federal agencies and resource managers and ensures a long-term biological sustainability of the economic statewide fisheries. It makes harvest and allocation decisions impacting all of Alaska user groups, including subsistence, personal use, sport, and commercial, so we can have a better track of that fishery and know how many fish they're taking out of the big picture.
Okay, just a comment, Mr. Chairman. I see there's a letter in here from the United Fisheries of Alaska, just pointed out to me that they are in support of it. So with that, no further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions for the bill sponsor? Seeing none, final comments by the bill sponsor.
The Sport Fishing Licensing and Logbook Program has been in operation since 2005 and received regular extensions. And the Department of Fish and Game supports House Bill 173. And I urge your support also.
Thank you. We're going to go ahead and set this bill aside for further review. Next up, our final piece of labor, House Bill 160, by the House Special Committee on Economic Development, Trade, and Tourism regarding tourism marketing contracts. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to have the sponsor introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside for further review. With us today, we have Representative Herron.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Bob Herron, the Kuskokwim area, House District 38. Mr. Chairman, currently our contribution, the state's contribution to tourism marketing campaigns, come July, will go to a 50-50 match. House Bill 160 states that a qualified trade association must provide matching funds. In essence, they put up a dollar, we'll give them $2. And then there's an additional trigger mechanism. If they wish to go beyond $3 million in their contribution, then they can put more skin in the game, and for $1.5 million, they could get $1 equals $3. Regardless of the amount that they put forward, the GF amount will not exceed $12 million. House Bill 160 requires a group within a qualified trade association to consist of three persons appointed by the governor and six selected by the QTA, four to direct the marketing campaign. There is a limit for lobbying within House Bill 160 and stating that the marketing campaign cannot lobby for the legislature regarding the funding of the contract. And finally, Mr. Chairman, Section 5, it repeals 4433125D, stating that the department, if there's additional funds that come toward this marketing campaign, the department may not choose the matching requirements. With that, Mr. Chairman, available for questions, sir.
Yeah, I think just as a clarification, I think the issue of lobbying, just so everybody's clear on that, page 3, line 9, they may not pay a lobbyist. They certainly can come in and lobby as a non-paid professional lobbyist. And I wouldn't want the public to think that we're going to exclude, you know, public access to the public process here. Do we have any initial questions for the bill sponsor? Okay, we've got two fiscal notes in your packet, one from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development for $3 million in general fund appropriations in the FY12 and $3 million in general funds appropriation in FY12 and $9 million in the information column, which is currently in the FY12 operating budget. 1-0 fiscal note from the Department of Revenue Tax Division, and we're going to go to the public hearing portion if we have no initial questions for the bill sponsor. We have nobody signed up in the LIOs, and we have nobody in the off-net, but we do have a couple people in the room that signed up. I think we'll start with Susan Bell, please.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Susan Bell, Commissioner for the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. I want to say our department is committed to strengthening and diversifying our economy, and our visitor industry is certainly a very important part of our, it's a significant employer and a significant piece of our overall state economy. Until recently, it has been a growth industry. I want to point out some of the work that our department does is measure economic impacts and measure visitation. Over the last 2 years, we've lost 5,000 jobs related to the visitor industry. In 2009, we lost 125,000 independent visitors. Last year, we lost approximately 150,000 cruise passengers. So I want to point out that all visitor markets, it's a statewide issue. Again, what we're seeing now is signs of recovery in these different markets, and I think it's very important that we continue to work towards restoring the health of this industry, and this is an important time not to back off from our state's marketing efforts. Speaking to this bill, I see this as a piece of a strategy. What we'd like to see is continuing the state investment at $16 million, and that would take a combination of legislation and budget work, but we hope to work with you on that. So again, brief comments in support of this industry, its employment, and the statewide economic impacts. Thank you.
And we have just recently emerged from, a worldwide recession, and we've also had a retreat dealing with the economy and, to some effect, head tax issue with cruise ships that most likely those two combinations had a significant impact in the decline in our visitors. Is that correct? Or is there another reason you can put your finger on why we had such a reduction?
Thank you, Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to speak that. And I do believe that in 2009 in particular, our independent markets were affected by that, by the recession that you mentioned. I also think that our changes in our tax regime and how we interact with our various markets, cruise industry in particular, matter. So I think part of the recovery that we're seeing, some of the research that the industry does and shares with us as the department that manages their contract, we're seeing recovery in independent visitation, but nowhere near where we were in our peak years in 2008. Our cruise recovery, we've seen an assortment of ships have announced that they're coming to Alaska, and so this year what we will have is a slight bump over last year. It'll be less than 10,000. Next year we'll see an increase of approximately 60,000 passengers, and I think that recovery is a combination of the change in the tax structure, it's the increased marketing, we have to make sure that we are competitive worldwide, and it's the change in our dynamic with the industry. We've changed from being in a lawsuit to going as individual businesses, as the state and many communities, some of whom are here in the room today, going out and saying, we value your business. So I think it takes whatever industry you're talking about, that kind of approach to maintain the health. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have questions? Commissioner Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is, do you have any concerns about the differences in the way we market tourism as a state and the way we market the salmon industry?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I know in our previous discussions when we've I know that how we market our seafood industry has been looked at as a model. I'm very proud to say that ASME is in our department, and I think that similar parallels, it's a combination of ensuring that we have an appropriate tax structure, making sure that the state funding is healthy, and making sure that we reach out to our market. So again, I know you've complimented ASME previously, and I appreciate that, and certainly pass the compliments on to the agency.
Any other questions for the commissioner? Thank you for coming forward today. Patty Mackey. And Patty's the last one signed up, so at least on my list here. The other one's just for questions.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Patty Mackey. I am the president and CEO of the Ketchikan Visitors Bureau and vice chair of government relations for the Alaska Travel Industry Association. Our association represents over 1,100 businesses throughout Alaska, small and large. And we have, as you well know, visited the Capitol many times over the past several years, seeking solutions in concert with the legislature to find the right balance of governance, industry support, and state funding. I'm here today to reiterate our desire to attain our goals of sustained funding to market Alaska, help for our industry to regain its footing after the past few years of decline, and to grow the economic benefits that this industry sector delivers to our communities, our families, and the state of Alaska. Since 2008, we have lost jobs and we've lost market share. State revenues from tourism taxes have declined from $140 million to $111 million. Small tourism business closures have occurred throughout Alaska, and while we do see some indications of recovery, we have not regained what we've lost. The visitor industry is complex. Many sectors exist to provide for the needs of a variety of visitors, from those who travel within the state by highway or air, to those who choose travel aboard a cruise ship or a state ferry. Whether they visit a city the size of Anchorage or Fairbanks, or embrace the unique charm of our far-flung villages, delivering the marketing message that visitors have many options and can visit our state again and again and see something new and different every time requires a comprehensive marketing program. Thanks to the FY 2011 appropriation, we achieved a substantial and much-needed increase in delivering Alaska's message to visitors. Television spots are airing on 7 different networks now instead of just one. magazine, and internet advertising was significantly expanded, as were many other components of our marketing program, which has enabled us to reach a larger pool of prospective visitors. Maintaining that level of state funding is critical to a consistent marketing effort to protect Alaska jobs, businesses, and families, and to open the door for future growth and development. I know that all of you understand the principal need of rejuvenating and growing our industry, and on behalf of our association, I thank you for the time you've spent with us this year and in years past in meetings, hearings, and informational gatherings. I urge your continued support to fund a strong tourism marketing voice for Alaska. Thank you.
Do you have any questions for Got one deep language on page 3, line 8, deals with that previous mentioned exclusion of a lobbyist. It says that, talking about exclusions, that is contracted with the state under A of this section may not pay a person to lobby the legislature regarding the funding of this contract. Doesn't that, that strikes me as a little odd language to be in a piece of legislation, and why is this language in there?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not really educated on all of the subtleties regarding lobbying. I can state for the record that pursuant to the language in the bill that, that requires that you not use state contract funds, that is not an issue with our organization.
So your organization then is comfortable not having paid lobbyists in the building working for additional funding? What you're telling me?
Mr. Chairman, at this time, given our desire to see a sustainable marketing program, and knowing that there are other bills in the works over the interim of this session, we are willing to work with this legislation.
Okay. We have any other questions? Okay. That will conclude the public hearing portion of this bill, seeing how no one else has signed up. Just pop through these. We have done the fiscal notes. So do we have the bill sponsor come forward? Do we have any final questions for the bill sponsor before we set this bill aside? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Heron, I'm trying to make sure that I understand correctly. The breakout in your sheet was helpful as far as breaking the money out. So we're saying that 50%, but not to exceed $12 million, but as long as the trade association is putting in 50%, we can get up to 9, and then beyond $9 million, up to a maximum of 12 is $1 for $3 from the state. Is that accurate? Am I understanding that correctly?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, that is correct. Essentially, the formula is $1 will get you $2, and you could go beyond the $3 million. But to go to the transitional trigger that's only good for 1 year is that if you put in $1, you'll get $3 to a maximum. But the total contribution by the state is $12 million. Regardless of the trigger or the formula combination.
Okay, thank you.
Rep. Heron, why, I'll ask you the same question I asked the previous presenter. Why is this language in here on page 3, line 2, barring paid lobbyists from an entity that's a marketing entity? It seems a little odd that a marketing entity has such substantial pushback to their marketing effort that in statute there's a bar from them hiring a paid lobbyist. Sounds like there's something going on here to me.
Mr. Chairman, that provision of the proposed legislation surfaced in the Finance CS, and there was no debate in the Finance Committee on that provision.
Well, maybe you can get back to the committee and help us understand why it's in there.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions? Senator McGuire.
Thank you, and through the chair. There's been a discussion and presented to me and some other members about a proposed amendment, which wouldn't occur today, but at a later point when the bill comes back up again. And I know this discussion took place in the other body about changing the match once you get up above $3 million from 1 to 4 as opposed to 1 to 3. And I just want to hear your thoughts briefly to the committee. I know that doesn't change the overall state contribution, but it does give the industry a little bit more money, and I wanted to hear your thoughts.
Through the chair, Senator McGuire, the discussion was that what you've heard in testimony today and then what we heard in the previous committees is that the funding level that the department and the people that have testified is $16 million from GF. And through the committee process, the cap was $12 million. And so in that transitional trigger, again, only good for 1 year, is if you change that formula from 1 gets you 3 to 1 gets you 4, it does get a little bit closer it maximizes the 12, and it gets them a little bit closer to current year preferred funding levels.
So, if I could, through the chair, so last question, are you supportive of that amendment?
I'm supportive of helping the industry. The amendment, though it doesn't require more skin in the game.
We don't have an amendment at the table.
Yeah, but I mean, supportive of the concept.
Of the concept, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, the trigger, an amendment to the transitional trigger would not require additional input from the industry, yes.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Herron, if this becomes law, the governor, for this new 9-member marketing board, the governor would be appointing 3 folks from the cruise industry. So that would be 3 cruise representatives on a new marketing board of 9, whereas now the current 32-member marketing board, the cruise line folks only have 3 seats on the existing 32-member marketing board. So that's a pretty dramatic increase in the influence of the cruise industry. They're a big part of the tourism industry. But do you have any thoughts about what went into dramatically increasing that level of influence from the old marketing board to the new marketing board?
And then when you answer that question dealing with the potential cruise membership board, add to that portion, if they don't contribute, how do you see their interaction on that board?
To the chair and to Senator Ellis, is Senator Ellis, this provision also surfaced in the Finance Committee, and I agree that it is a significant change. And the testimony that I heard in House Finance, though we didn't hear any today, was there was concern of such a dramatic change. And to the chair, Senator, is that there is, as I see it, there is no requirement for there to be a significant financial input from those cruise interests. There is a hope that there would be additional attention and possibly additional financial contribution to a marketing campaign because of this new arrangement on the board.
And if they don't contribute, it appears they'd have 1/3 control of the board. Is that a correct interpretation of a 9-member board comprising 3 members of an industry, if that industry doesn't contribute, regardless of the board?
That scenario has been articulated to me as well, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Additional follow-up questions? Senator Flynn, didn't mean to add on, but
it was fine.
It was a combo question.
So. Helped.
Seeing no further questions, you want to have any final comments before we set this bill aside?
Mr. Chairman, I really look forward to working with you on this legislation.
Okay, thank you. That'll conclude this morning's
brief at ease.
Meeting, we're going to stand at a brief at ease.